law school, and he's going to be going to court quite a bit.
Still live on the land, to the best of my ability, I do as well, notwithstanding the fact that I had to travel 2,000 kilometers to go to law school from my own communities. And I use that picture for two reasons. One, the caribou was shot in Mackenzie Mountains in the North Coast Territories. I had to travel another 2,000 kilometers north through my territory to find a place where they could hunt caribou, despite the fact that caribou are indigenous to my lands. My family and my people stopped hunting caribou in 1974 after the WC made a dam, the Big Idaho Electric Dam, in the peace, eliminated their territories. So we voluntarily stopped hunting. So for me to hunt this thing, I have to go a long way away and follow other people's law to hunt it. That caribou was shot with pursuant to Casco law. As a consequence, I had to give all of it away or else my hunting medicine would not be good anymore. Disrespect the law and the tradition. There are consequences that reverberate and echo throughout your life. And that's an interesting principle, I think, as we try to contemplate how to deal with the issues that Ranging Granny so eloquently put forward. there's one thing I want to show you actually. That's my grandma making a hive. And again, the point about bias is simply that the bias I have, the perspective I have, comes from the simple reality. This is the world that I love. What is best in me comes from here. And this is what I believe in, what I'm trying to protect. But I admit that it's not necessarily the same as everybody else. I don't ask that you adopt or share or find it compelling. It's merely how I present myself and how I find myself to be. Now, I'm from northeastern British Columbia. This is a map of Treaty 8. The treaties, generally speaking, are the mechanism by which the Canadian nation state asserted sovereignty over what was formerly unceded lands. There's no dominion, there's no domination, there wasn't wars in the same way as there was here. So my ancestors, the slaves and the beavers, so Etchodene, Dunza, Crees, they signed a treaty in 1899. This is my mother's nation, that's the crest, this is my father's nation. We signed on in 1910. And again, this is another angle on this. This is the bias, but I want you to pay attention to this map. And look at this map. This is the second largest hydrocarbon deposit on Earth, the Western Canadian Sedimentary Basin. Now it's not entirely encapsulated by treaty number 8, treaty number 6 takes a big chunk of it. But this is Treaty 8. I'm from right about here, tar sands right about there. Now, I mean, we could go about the figures, but we're looking at, and these figures, were from a Globe Mail article published 8 days ago. They're using 2011 estimates, recoverable estimates. So these are about as close as we can get to real numbers. Canadian dollars, I don't know how that translates to the American, but, at least $500 billion in recoverable crude alone. A good chunk of gas can come from my people's territory. I think this really illustrates the scale and complexity of the issues that I and you and all of us have to engage with. Because in Treaty 8, there's potential for a world-changing amount of carbon to be released into the atmosphere. There's all kinds of consequences happening as a result of this development. I'm not sure how many of you guys have been up to this country. I'm not sure how many of you guys know what happens up there on a regular basis, what has happened. But I hope that as a consequence of me sharing a little bit with you, can understand how connected all of this is. This is a good example of how it's connected. This is the map of pipeline infrastructure in North America as of 2 years ago, I believe. My territory is Fort Nelson, my father's, my mom's a bit lower. You guys have most of the pipelines, clearly. But my territory, what I'm a part of, is innately and forever connected to bigger things. This is one of the many ways we are connected. It's not just the water that we share, it's not just the air, it's not just our shared interest in the future for our grandchildren, or recognizing the sacrifices those who came before us. We are literally connected. And I think that's relevant. It's one of the reasons I chose to come here and share with you guys. I want to learn from you. I want to hear about your struggles and your fights. I want to learn what you've done and how you engage and share a little bit of what I've done. Because we are, we stand together on stuff like this. This is one of the main reasons why. I assume most of you are familiar with hydraulic fracture, something I have to explain, but the one point is that my territory has massive amounts of both large-scale conventional oil and gas, and large-scale gas in particular, a lot of horizontal drilling, a lot of fracking. The issue in our territory relates to this. What happens subsurface isn't really echoes on the surface, and even what happens on the surface, we can't really fully see and appreciate what's going on. For us, these issues are seen. What happens down there is huge, because if you include that for that's 20,000 year recharge rate, and you have a map of the 9 years to go, because my people hope to be in that land for at least 10,000. as of 2005. These are processing facilities, glycol dehydrators, upgraders, pressure units, all kinds of stuff. These are well sites. These are seismic lines. This is the combination. The map to admit this is the scale. I will give you guys a map of this two scale based on the gas commission data. And I want you to understand, and I think most of you do, the complex, interrelated, and cumulative nature of these kinds of developments involved in Northeast BC has this. The people in Vancouver, the people in Ottawa, the people in Houston, they don't live in this world. That would most of them live in the way that our people do, trying to live off the land, the traditional, that's a denier, that is our way. This is an interesting valley to grow up in. Another point, we look at the OPEC oil crisis in 74 and the consequent increase in drilling. We are looking at ongoing exponential increases in development. At this point, this figure is laughably low, 18,000. Minimum count for wells in my people's territory is between 28,000 and 31,000 based upon how the Oil and Gas Commission, National Energy Board, regulator in Canada. That we have a ton of wells, and that's going to delay and raise issues we talk about conventional energy, frack in particular. I promised you guys some data that's to scale. I'll do my best to provide. What I'm going to show you is an animation created by my nation. Look at the top corner. Every second a month goes by. This is the last 12 and a half years of my people's land. This is Fort Nelson First Nation territory. This is Etchegeni territory. I want you to watch what happens here. You see the spur road gets built, 2004, 2005. Barnett Shale is coming online. The technology's getting good. 05, 06, they're starting to explore. 10 years getting sold. 07 gets a bit bigger. You know, see those splotches here and there. There's pipelines. And then here it comes. 708, we start seeing bigger 3D seismics. Watch what happens between 08 and 2010, 2011. This is the Horn River Basin right here, the largest unconventional gas field in the county. And this is a map off one of the gas commission data two scale. This is using OGC data and map reference data, so it's not there. It says May last year. Now, if you're like my family, you're unlucky enough to have a trap line in this territory. If you're like my people, this is sort of the breadbasket of your community. What do you